I was just like, oh my God, this is actually sexism at work. Like, you're telling me, like, the rationale behind the offer was, you just don't quite have the track record. We think you're great, but we just want to see you prove it out a little bit more. And like, we believe you'll get there. I mean, it's all the things that we've heard and I've certainly heard.
Absolutely.
But it was the first time that it was so, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, I maybe have faced sexism in my career, but this felt like clearly what that was.
Yeah.
And sadly, I've compared notes with other women who have gone on to take, you know, GP roles at firms, and they have similar stories. And had I not had that offer, I probably would have joined a firm and I probably would have taken a partner offer. But that experience was like, oh no, I'm going to just go ahead and do this and prove you wrong.
Welcome everyone to Drinks with a VC episode 4. We've dubbed this one the virtual inauguration watch party. Thank you for listening or watching or from whatever platform you are joining us on. My name is Vikram Lakwara and I am the co-founder and managing director for Green Cow Venture Capital. And I am joined by my esteemed co-hostess with the mostest, Bree Hansen, who leads up business development for Berkland. Bree, you've got two disclaimers for us.
Yes, one, guests and hosts drink on this show, and we ask that if you join us, you be of legal age and drink responsibly. If you want to know about check size, stage, other similar questions, this is the wrong podcast. On Drinks with the VC, we're all about digging deeper and getting to know the person behind investment decisions.
So, it is only fitting that on a day in which our nation is celebrating its first woman in the high office as Vice President of the United States, that we also welcome to the show our first female guest. I have been lucky enough to call her my friend, particularly since we both got started in venture at around the same time. Sarah was at Menlo Ventures, and I have just seen her star rise so high via illustrious stints at Facebook, Dropbox, Airbnb. Now she's running her own shop, a seed stage fund called Wave Capital, and we have the pleasure of having her on. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Well, thanks. I'm blushing. Nice to be here.
It's so good to have you. It's good to, I don't know, I'm very giddy about this because, you know, I often look back at my career and there was a point where you were at Dropbox and I almost worked at Dropbox in corp dev under you. And I thought that is the one thing that I wish had come to fruition only because it's just so fun being in your presence and working with you. So it's exciting to have you on.
Well, I think you've ended up in the right place. And as I always say, the roads take us where they're supposed to. But yeah, sometime we'll keep working together. We can still be friends.
That's right.
Stop.
Deal flow, collaboration, all those things. We're going to co-invest together for sure.
I have to say, Sarah, I'm impressed by your equipment. You are far more professional than Vic and I. It's almost embarrassing. You like stood us up.
Well, I'm embarrassed because it's like coming to an event and being overdressed for the occasion.
Oh.
You're wearing a ball gown and everyone else is in business cash and you're like, well, that's unfortunate. So
look, not at all.
Sorry about that.
No, this is episode 4 for us. And I just want to say that our production value gets higher and higher. And I think you've just made us feel like we have to up our game. So episode 5, 6, and 7, watch out.
It's not that expensive. And you know what? Maybe I'll like mail you my gear because I'm not using it anymore. And someone should. So maybe that's what I'll do as a thank you gift for having me on.
We need to
but get to only into... one of you, so I don't know. It depends who's better on the podcast.
Definitely me. Definitely me, because I can't get my own AirBuds to work, or AirPods.
That's
or
true.
Pixel Buds, whatever you want to call them.
Aren't even AirPods. What are you working with there?
They're Pixel Buds.
Pixel Buds. Okay.
Yeah. If Google
way to be different. You know,
yeah.
I'm not going with what Apple does because that would be too normal.
No, too normal.
Contrarian. And if, look at you.
That's right. And if someone from Google is listening and you want to,
and wants to sponsor this podcast.
And wants to sponsor this podcast.
They really should, because we both have Pixel, but that's the weird part. It's
Pixel
actually
bugs
creepy.
And Pixels.
And
yeah,
my Google,
which means
listening to
which means, well, by the way, we can't be on Clubhouse. We've been, we're not allowed. We're not Apple users.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My membership is just sitting there dormant. I don't even feel like putting it on Laura's phone and kind of checking out Clubhouse from that angle. I'm over it. I'll wait.
Sad text.
Well, how early
I'm
were
over
you
it.
On it? Were you, do you have like a really good username? Because I want to brag about my username. I'm very proud.
We don't even have usernames. We're not on Clubhouse because we're on Android.
Yeah, I haven't set it up. So
you actually haven't? Oh my
I God. Haven't.
And you call yourself a VC. Oh my goodness.
I know. Well, you know, I'm not big time in it yet. Come on, Sarah.
I'm like on the fringe of fringe, and that's how I got the invite. So it's okay. Yeah.
Okay, but so since you mentioned it, what is your amazing username?
At Sarah, which I mean, that's so cool. I literally in no other social media platform that I've ever joined have I been early enough to just get my first name. It's a very common name too.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of Sarahs out there. Lots. Yeah. Especially in venture, to be honest. It's probably the most common female venture capital name. I'm going to put that out there. You can fact check
it. You should sell it. You should sell it to a female celebrity that's named Sarah. I don't, I can't think of any, but.
I don't know.
Maybe it's a nerd. It's a nerdy name or something. There really aren't that many Sarah.
It's hard. I try and get at Vic with a K. You know,
right.
I'm always trying to get at VIK. And, you know, invariably at all of these technology startups, there is an Indian, you know, whose name is Vikram, who prefers to go by Vic. And I am shit out of luck, invariably.
Yeah.
So that's never going to happen.
You know, anyway, I'm glad. Thank you for letting me brag about that. It's
yeah, that's fine.
It's an absurdly happy, big achievement for myself. So, you know, I don't know what that says about me.
I mean, what it says is that, you know, you're an early adopter and you would love to have that moment in time.
Yeah.
And I think you like savor that moment.
I can't wait.
That's
I hope it, I mean, I actually just hope it's successful so that I can go back and be like, guys, well, do you want to know my username? Like, yeah, that's how early I was. First couple months. That's right. I know. Look at the billion users that are on here now.
Yeah.
I was one of the first 100. So, you know, that's what I want to do. So I hope they're successful so I can say that.
I love it.
Not
I
because
it.
I use the product very much anymore. But,
you could like put the screenshot of it on your headstone, you know, at Sarah.
I think
on
that's
Clubhouse.
What's going to matter to me for sure. That's the important stuff for sure.
At Sarah. There you go. The headstone.
She was first like, on Clubhouse.
Like, wait, that's weird because that's not your Twitter handle.
Yeah.
You're right.
I don't know how it works at Clubhouse, but okay. So you chose Manhattan. Tell us why this is your drink.
Well, it's my favorite drink, but it was not always my favorite drink. I feel like. So the backstory is my husband's family and I met my husband in college. So we've been dating for a long time. And I remember first going to a holiday event with his family and it was like, would you like a Manhattan? And that's apparently their drink of choice. Like every holiday they're making Manhattans. That's what they do. And I tried one. And as a 22-year-old wanted to spit it out because it was not my jam. I was more of a vodka soda girl, you know, and white wine and vodka sodas. And, but I was like, you know what? This guy's a keeper. I'm gonna like this drink and I'm gonna learn to love it because I love this family. We're gonna get behind it. And every holiday event, I'd try another one. And then eventually I was like, this is really good. And now I love them. But that's how I was introduced to them.
Do you have a specific type of cherry or vermouth or the ingredients? Do they have to be just so? What is your, how do you
I
do
mean,
that?
I would
you
say that like,
cocktail?
You know, it's, I sometimes like to vary it. Like I like a rye Manhattan sometimes, a little sweeter. Sometimes usually I go with a bourbon. Yeah, there's certain cherries that are higher end than others. The one you guys said is actually my favorite kind. It's like you knew. And all the ingredients are important. Like the bitters even are important. It's just, you know, it's, it really is my go-to drink. So like I've had a lot of them over the years. And so like, I love going to a nice cocktail bar when, you know, life is back to normal and getting a Manhattan. Cause I know they're going to like, they're going to up level me even more. And I'm going to be like, well, what was that? What kind?
Was that?
You know? Yeah. So I'm a bit of a snob on the Manhattans, not on everything.
Rocks and no rocks.
Do rocks. Yeah, definitely okay. Rocks. Okay. Ideally it's like one big one, you know, the big square one. Yeah. I love that. Yes. I not enough to like make them myself, but I do like getting them at a place.
Lovely. That okay. All right.
And I think I went into too much detail there. So you're welcome to come in at
all.
Any point.
Not at all. The show is Drinks with a VC.
That's
I think
true.
If we
That's
didn't
true.
Go
so
through these details. Yes.
A big part of that title.
It is. Absolutely. Well, cheers to that. And cheers again to the first woman on our show on the same day that the first woman vice president in the United States is named. So fantastic.
Cheers. Yeah, it's truly something to celebrate. And truly something to celebrate this soon. It won't be weird. It'll be just normal. Can't wait for that. You know, like, oh, no big deal. We don't have to even talk about it because duh.
Absolutely.
Can't wait.
So we have a segment that you may be familiar with if you've watched a previous podcast called VC Unboxing. And I think it is time for our first, and that would be, we actually have bags, as you may have seen. It's a little bit easier, more predictable to put in. So C, bag C is
bag
the one that
C?
We're going to start with.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Should I get my, do you guys have these bags? Is it just me?
No, it's just you.
It's just
because
you.
Because it's the VC doing the unboxing?
Yes.
Oh, you know what?
Correct.
C is my first one. It's like I knew.
That's great.
I'm so prepared. Okay. So I'm going to
open
it.
By the way, I don't know if our production quality is getting any better, but the bags that we're putting the gifts in, the quality of these bags
really
has
nice.
Gotten much higher.
I was like thrilled to do this. And then I saw the bags and the drink and I was like, guys, I would have done it for free. You know what I mean?
It's like Christmas.
Okay.
It's like Christmas.
I'm unwrapping. Ooh, is the bag bigger than the thing? Are there multiple things in here?
There's just one in that
okay,
one.
Okay. Yep. Girl power, the card game. That's what I got.
Nice.
Yes. So we wanted to get you a game that
email.
You could play with your daughter, Sydney.
So great.
Now that we have a female vice president and you yourself are a mom and also, I'm assuming, a feminist, we've thought that this would be a really fun game to play with her. And we wanted to know a little bit about your thoughts on our new vice president.
Oh, man. You know, that's so cool. Yeah, I'm super pumped. Kamala, you know, I'm so impressed by her composure, her like ability to relate, which I think actually in the primaries was lost. But she's a badass. Like, I don't know how else to put it. She's a badass and she comes across that way. And I love that. And she like, you know, I think I have so many feelings about like the reactions that some people have to her about like she seems so serious and I don't know, she's so tough and like I hate the sexism that can come as a result of power and women in power, but I think she's amazing. I think she's incredibly smart. I think she's incredibly ambitious and I hope she's our next president. So I'm excited to see. I just think like so far what we've seen since she's been the vice president elect, it's just like phenomenal. And I, like I said, I didn't see that as much in the primary in her, as I now see. So hopefully we're all seeing the real Kamala and she's just more comfortable in her skin in the public eye.
I reached out to a number of my, certainly my sister who has 5 kids, 3
of
which
I still don't understand. How do you
I don't know how you do that either. But my sister has 5 kids and you know, they're half Indian, right? Yeah. And you know, I sent her this text message. I just said, I really hope one day the two youngest daughters can really understand this moment. I know my oldest niece absolutely does, but what was it like just watching that moment with your daughter and your son? I mean, your son's much younger, and I don't know if it's going to hit either of them quite. But.
You know, in some ways, and on, you know, when finally the election was called, and in some ways I was actually like, I was more sad than happy in that, like, my daughter literally had no idea that that wasn't normal. And so me calling it out as a big event and her being like confused, it was one of the first times that I think she, and I don't even know that she really understands it obviously, but was starting to percolate the concept of men and women are viewed differently. And so that was kind of sad to me that it's like, they start out so naive and fresh and like, you know, as parents, our job is to educate them and get them ready for the world. But it was like a sad reality of, yeah, I know. It is weird that this hasn't happened, but it has happened now. And so we should be excited. It was like a very conflicting thing. Maybe if she were a little older and already aware, I would have just been on the happy side. But it was like that coupled with, to be honest, the fact that it's like, and she's still not a president. A vice president. And my daughter was like, well, what does a vice president do? Like, well, stumble, fumble. But anyway, so it was like less grand from what you might expect, actually.
Yeah, I was taken in the moment, and obviously it's a special moment for a lot of people out there, and we are part of a very divided world. But you know, I was just, for the first time, I was really very hopeful again, and excited about things. Actually, I think, and this is going way off topic, but probably the most powerful part about the whole inauguration for me was Amanda Gorman's
Oh my god, I had to rewatch it.
And her poem.
Not amazing. She's 22. Oh
yeah.
My god, she's amazing.
What were you doing at 22? Because I wasn't doing that. And I just, no. I mean, just a,
I was
I just
an investment banking analyst, like crying in a bathroom stall because my, you know, associate was yelling at me for being stupid. So not exactly as glamorous or impressive.
It was just so, I just want a finger of her talent. Like that's, I just want God. A little
and the
tiny
delivery of
bit
it,
of that.
Like everything about it was just
everything
flawless. Yeah. I was pretty taken aback, and I'm not a big poetry person, but I was like floored. Yeah, it was it was pretty amazing.
So Kamala and you and I were California,
right? Born and bred,
born and raised, and you know, I born in the Bay Area. I of course went to college in New York. You stayed
I
here.
Stayed. I'm just all in, never leaving. Don't try and get me to Miami. I'm stuck here.
So many questions about this. So many questions about this. Just on that topic, what do you think of sort of this VC exodus to Miami? And by the way, this is not to say, look, I don't support entrepreneurship wherever it springs up, and if they created a venture ecosystem in Miami, that's fantastic. But what do you think about all of that?
Well, I think it's annoying how it's unfolded. And a little disingenuous with like, I mean, to me, a lot of it is driven by taxes, which is fine. And I get it, but let's not like pretend it's something it's not. I mean, I think that's a big driver of why a lot of the tech folk have left. And in general, I'm kind of like, you know, I'm not sitting here crapping all over your decisions. So why are you doing that to me? You know, like that's fine. You can do you. I'm gonna do me. And like, we can live in harmony without having what feels like fights over this.
Sure.
The people I actually have spoken with a few people who have actually moved to Miami and like, we're trying to do the hard pitch and it's just like, I don't know. It feels like you're trying to lure me into a cult that I'm not interested in being a part of. I don't know. Honestly, it feels weird and forced and also a little aggro.
Yeah.
But in general, it's like, if you want to do that, that's totally fine. And you can talk about how great it is because you're so happy with your life decisions and that's fine. It's the point where it gets to like the dogging on the other decision that I take issue.
Sure.
Which I would say about most things in life, you know, you want to make your own decisions about your life. That's fine. I'm going to make mine. That's fine. And we can all be different.
How does that
sort of, to a certain degree, there's certainly bad things.
I agree with that. I agree with that. I think, look, there's no need that you can't have it both ways, right? You don't have to, not everything in this world is so binary, right? Totally. And it's not so black and white where you have to have it one way and that's the right way. And particularly with entrepreneurship and the venture ecosystem, I think to each his own, and you go to where you think opportunities might be for you, and great.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yep. I also, I mean, I will be interested to see post COVID and like in the heat of the summer, when it's like insanely hot there, what will transpire after people have gone through that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I wonder, you know, when mosquitoes start hitting and it gets unbearable.
I mean, it's also just like not my vibe. It's not my vibe. It's not my weather. I clearly am born here. I'm from here. Yeah. I like it here. I'm not leaving. So I am in that camp.
Sure.
It's not going to be for me. Yeah.
Right. But the Bay Area is your vibe. It's definitely my vibe. Yeah. What about the Bay Area has informed your way of thinking about entrepreneurship, about entrepreneurialism? How has it kind of manifested itself in your investment thesis?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I, having grown up here, and I don't know, Vic, if you share this, I grew up here with a family that was not at all involved in tech, which was kind of bizarre because when I was growing up, it was, you know, as Google was really coming to be Google. And I remember I grew up in Los Altos. So I grew up right down the street from, you know, like the movie theater I would go to was at Shoreline, which was right next to Google's campus. And so it was weird to be like, what are they doing there? My dad is a doctor. And anyway, so I just like never really understood tech, but was yet surrounded by it. And so when I went to college and, you know, chose to do finance after, I never even considered tech because it was like not part of the vernacular, weirdly. And so finally, when I like switched into venture and met you and then segued into tech, it was like eye-opening and kind of like, I don't know, I always had to explain myself for having grown up here and not understanding any part of the industry. So it's funny because like, I think the Bay Area, obviously having anywhere you grew up is going to influence who you are, but the tech scene definitely did not feel like it influenced me growing up because I was so outside of it. And yeah, so for me, I think though, like I'm much more influenced by the career I had in tech, And I will be the first to say that I was one of those people that was like, Silicon Valley is special. You should probably start a company here. And if you don't, like, it's just going to be harder. And I think 2020 has definitely changed my mind on that. I still believe in the Valley and or the Bay Area. And I still believe that there's a lot of reasons for it to be a long-term hub, but yeah, I'm much more open-minded because I'm seeing it with our companies, like virtual work is here and it's here to stay. And some hybrid world will be our future. And I just think that it took this extreme environment for at least me to see that working, but it probably took some extreme. I do believe that it took everyone being forced into it to prove that everyone could do it. Cause I think I do think, and I came from, you know, Facebook, Dropbox and Airbnb were very like HQ focused product driven companies. And so, you know, it took like a Dropbox. It was while I was there that we started expanding into other offices, having engineering in them. That was like a very controversial topic because so much of how work got done was just like in the hallways. And so I think, you know, I was very informed by that. And now I'm realizing that that doesn't need to be the way. But to be honest, I think there's a lot of benefits to being in person too. So I do hope that someday we can have some sort of hybrid.
Yeah. Well, so this brings up another interesting kind of similarity between you and me. Just thinking about the idea of team and remote work, et cetera. You and I both started playing team sports and then gravitated towards solo sports. And my solo sport of obscurity was squash. Solo sport was fencing.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's true.
First of all,
how does one get into fencing?
How does one get into fencing? I mean, I imagine people think about this, about squash back in the 90s. Now squash is a little bit more popular, but fencing is still
not under the radar. Yeah, it's under the radar. Yeah. I can't tell you how I got into it. I don't know. I really don't remember, but I was very intrigued by it. And I think, I mean, it was in high school, and I think I was going through a phase where I wanted to be different and unique. And that was probably the driver of it more than anything. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. But I am in general, well, it's interesting. Yeah, in general, I consider myself more of like a team player type of person, which is why actually venture is uniquely challenging for someone like me. And Vic, we've talked about this. I think the only way I could see myself coming back into venture was starting my now firm and working in an environment that we've created, which is very much like we really do. My partner and I work together all the time.
Yeah.
And our fund model supports that way of operating, because I'm not well built and well equipped for solo venture work, which is most firms. And I get that.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I thrive off of energy and collaboration of other people.
Yeah. Do you set up Zoom meetings, by the way, with your partner?
Riley.
With Riley. Do you just set up like a Zoom meeting?
We kind of have like a standing 9:30. If we don't have any other meetings, like we're checking in at 9:30 and like we're hashing things out. It's half the time over Zoom, half the time over phone. But like we have a constant, we're constantly talking to each other throughout the day, either just the two of us or with our portfolio companies or with startups that we're talking to for diligence and stuff. So there was a lot of time together.
What's the craziest Zoom moment that's happened for you?
Oh, God. Oh,
this is the perfect time for me.
I don't know if I should say this one. What is the craziest Zoom one?
We can edit it out. Josh, don't edit it out.
I'm trying to think if anyone's been working out while they've been on Zoom. And I don't think on Zoom they've been doing that. I would say that people have definitely zoomed in from some interesting exotic locations. And I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that.
You can't just leave that. Great. That's a cliffhanger.
Most exotic location that wasn't a green screen picture background that they
stop saving her. Stop saving her.
I mean, like
I'm trying to.
Oh God. Yeah. Dropping it there. Leaving it there.
Okay. It's gonna give it away. It'll give it away, right? Better.
Exactly.
All right.
I can't.
Fair enough.
See, Sarah always has tremendous presence and just understands the moment. I am the king of segue. So I'm going to take that segue of you understanding the moment.
Okay.
How else have I understood
the moment? Oh, fencing.
Well, fencing is so much about timing and it's about positioning. If I'm looking at your career, there is no human being in my immediate network that I know that has been better at, and had more impeccable timing and understand positioning than you. I mean, you literally, I watched you go from pre-IPO to pre-IPO to pre-IPO. And some might say she's just lucky. She's in the right place at the right time. I think that's total bullshit. I think there is something to your mindset and your thinking that led you to have not only those opportunities, but to have success in all of those opportunities. Can you tell us
The secret.
A little bit about that. Yeah, what's the secret?
You know, well, first of all, thank you. You are making me blush. I think, you know, there's a few things that I've always been driven in underlying driving those decisions. Like when I first went to Facebook, that was very deliberate. And that was my dream job. Like I couldn't have been more giddy. I think in your questionnaire, you asked something like a moment of excitement. I mean, honestly, when I got the call that I got the job, that might've been like peak excitement for my life. Don't tell my kids. Their birth was obviously very exciting.
So important.
But I like, yes, I know, Zinni, you won't listen.
One moment was filled with pain and joy. Yeah, exactly. The other was just joy.
You know, I was like, on an epidural, drugged up. It wasn't, that's so different. Yeah. But I was very deliberate about that. And when I left Menlo, which for me was like an easy decision. I didn't love venture at first. Like it really, because of the reasons I said before, it was just too lone wolfy for me. So I knew I wanted to go to a company, and it was like, I mean, I was obsessed with Facebook. I loved the product I had for, you know, cause when I was in college, a freshman in college, it was 2004. It was just starting to heat up. It was just like the coolest thing ever. And, I realized I wanted to do corp dev because I realized that I could work with founders and I liked negotiating and all that. I really wanted to be at a small team. And so I like stack ranked. It was like Facebook was the dream job. LinkedIn and then Twitter were the like number 2 and 3. Sure. Never talked to LinkedIn, never talked to Twitter. I got turned down from a few other not so great startups along the way. Facebook was the only job I got. And I just happened to like, it was the dream. So it's funny because like I talk about this with my husband and I don't think he would mind sharing that. So he went to Stanford for business school. He applied to Stanford, HBS and Northwestern and only got into Stanford. And it was the only school that he wanted of the three, like the most. So it's so funny how you have these moments where it's almost like they know that you really want it. And that passion really does shine through. But yeah, I was very deliberate about that. And it, you know, part of it was because I saw the potential for the company. Sure. So, you know, I think that's, but I obviously part of it was luck because I was still very young and I learned a ton there. And then, you know, Dropbox,
Well, but wait, going from Facebook to Dropbox.
Yeah.
I think there are not a lot of people that would say, hey, we're going to take something that's on rocket ship trajectory and then go to something and then just leave.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay. How did you have that presence in mind to kind of go, okay, this is what I want to do?
Different business models too, you know?
Totally. It was different industries. Everything felt very different. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, in the moment it was, and it's funny cause like I look back and I was only at Facebook for 18 months or less than 2 years. And I was at Dropbox for 2 years, then Airbnb at 3, but they were such intense years. And like, you know, as the people say, dog years in startup land. I mean, it felt like that. I mean, at Facebook, I probably led at least 10 acquisitions in my year and a half. And that like baked in my first couple of months where I was floundering like a new hire. So it really was like an intense time, and we went through an IPO, and it was when Instagram got acquired. So it was just like I felt like a lot was packed in, but I also was starting to see the writing on the wall, which was like, we were starting to expand the team. When I joined, I was the first hire of the head of the group. So it was just me and him for a while, which was like really the dream again. That's why I was so excited. I could learn from this amazing person. But I could see that like we were going to expand the team more and we were going to just get bigger. And I was like, well, what is my role going to be? Like, I'm never going to be in this company right now for a long time. It's going to take me a while to get to absolutely leading that Instagram deal. And I wanted to create a space where I could do that. And so Dropbox to me was an opportunity to take it up a level. And I was like, the training wheels were going to be off and I was going to be on my own and no one was going to be there holding my hand through that. And I really wanted that kind of experience to push myself. And I, you know, after spending time with the founders and the leadership there, I got excited about the caliber of the team there. And during my time there, I will say across those three companies, the average caliber of talent at Dropbox was by far the highest. Like the people at that company were phenomenal. I think they've missed a lot of their way in certain aspects of vision and execution, which is frustrating. But at that point I could just see this like talent pool of really amazing people I could work with, an opportunity to kind of forge my own path and learn on my own in a way that I felt like Facebook was no longer going to give me. And I took that. And so, and I stayed there and was, I mean, I probably learned the most at Dropbox just because we were so acquisitive during my time there. I think in 2 years I led like 16 acquisitions and hired a team. And it was just like a really pretty exciting time. But then I also got to this point where I felt like, okay, I'm not reaching my potential anymore. Like I need to find the next thing. Part of it was driven by, candidly, a frustration of like feeling like we weren't moving fast enough on, you know, where the business was going. But mostly it was just like, you know, this job is very specific. M&A is like, you know, you can learn a ton, obviously, but so much of it is also about the market and navigating internal dynamics and all of that. And I wanted to do that at another company.
Yeah.
So actually the Airbnb point is interesting because I was debating between joining Pinterest at that point and Airbnb. So I chose Airbnb, but
is that because you had more passion or excitement towards their product, or was it?
It felt like a bigger opportunity. It felt riskier actually, because I think the team at Pinterest felt more familiar. A lot of them came from Facebook, and it felt like they more came from the tech ecosystem. I literally knew I knew a lot of people who worked at Pinterest. I knew nobody that worked at Airbnb, which was bizarre to me. I was like, this is probably a bad sign because I've not been around long enough that I probably know somebody. I knew nobody there. But I'd been a host for a number of years. So my husband and I had bought a place as a vacation rental property, and we were hosting, and we were super hosts. So we were like deep in the platform, knew the product very well. But I really just saw I really felt like the opportunity was big, and meeting Brian Chesky, like, man, Brian is just, he is exceptional, and he's, his passion and vision were very clear. What wasn't as clear to me was like, how does that translate into working with someone like that? And that felt like a flyer, but I could see that passion, and I could see to me, the business opportunity was much bigger. And the pace at which they were operating felt bigger or better.
Sure.
I felt like that was a big thing that I was like craving. Facebook was very intense, fast paced. Dropbox was a little bit more deliberate, and I was really craving this, like, let's just break through barriers. Let's go at all, like at whatever it takes. And I had the opportunity to build the team from scratch and build the function from scratch. And that was something that was really compelling too.
And now you've started Wave Capital, whose investment thesis, right? Your seed stage fund, and you're focused on marketplace plays.
Yeah.
We are going to pause now because VC unboxing.
Oh, yeah.
Part two.
Which are we ready next? For that,
Bree?
Yeah, we are. Now it's time for
some
the
are
bag.
Numbers S- are some numbers and letters.
Yes, yeah, some are numbers and some are letters.
Okay.
SS? So you're gonna go with SS.
It's heavy.
This is exciting.
It's heavy.
This is Vic's
really heavy?
Pick.
This is heavy. My pick. This is my pick.
Oh no.
This is Vic's. The first pick was mine. I'd seen it at Cliff's Variety a couple years ago, and I'd been waiting to buy it for someone, and this felt like the right moment.
Look at that. Look at that bowl.
Wait, but keep going. No, that's part of it.
Oh,
and I like that color.
Is this like a salad thing? A salad spinner?
It's a salad spinner.
Because salads are my favorite thing.
You fully loaded ones.
Oh my God. Yes. I'm not even going to take the other thing.
Can I just say, you know, my favorite purchase under $50 on Amazon for quarantine has been a salad spinner, because you'll take a box from Imperfect and the kale or the lettuce, whatever, comes like all leafy and beautiful, but it's wet. And it's alone.
And it's gonna get like mildewy if you don't.
And it's gonna get mildewy.
Yeah.
So you throw it straight into that salad spinner, and then
good. And it'll last.
Good.
It'll last.
It'll last.
God. Does anyone else love salads? I know. It's not like a diet thing. I just love salads. No, so, I do.
I'm with you. I like fully loaded. I'm all about I'm not, like, what can I do? Greens,
but I'm like, no. Let's throw in some, like, you know, sweet potato and a protein and some avocado. Like, you know, obviously you're making a meal here. I don't want to be hungry in 10 minutes, but it's right. Just like, I just think it's so great. I just love them. So I also love unhealthy things, as we were talking about pizza and
yes,
everything.
Yes,
I love that stuff too, to be clear. Yeah. I'm not like a creep.
I can't love salads because my sister, if anyone's been around my sister for a long period of time, they'll know that every dinner there's a salad and it always kind of feels like it's the same salad. Now, it is one of the tastiest salads on the planet, but it really feels, it's just too much.
I grew up like that. In fact, it's funny because to me, I want a salad as a meal. I don't want a side. Yeah.
No, that's what my sister wants as well.
And, I grew up with my mom at every dinner. We had a side salad every dinner. And it was like very simple. It was like, we're going to have some shaved carrots and some mushrooms and lettuce. And we're going to call that a salad. I don't call that a salad. I call that a side of greens. You know what I'm saying?
You should have come to my home. My mom is a fully baked salad person. It actually ticks off so my brother. My brother and my dad are like, stop putting all this stuff in my salad. And I'm like, Mar. She loves it.
I just love it. There's nothing that makes me happier when I look in the fridge and it's like, oh my God, we have so many leftover roasted veggies. I'm just going to throw those in. Just going to throw them in. I'm going to love it. Because otherwise, like, do I like leftover roasted vegetables? No, not really. You throw it in a salad. Love it. Mm. Love it. It's delicious. All of a sudden it's delicious.
Do you raw or pickled onions?
I do. I like green onions. Little softer. I mean, I'll throw in garlic. Like that's something I've really upped my game on in quarantine COVID is my salads that I make. I really enjoy that. It's like a ritual along with making my coffee in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah. So in your search for the next Amazon or marketplace play,
where do salads come in?
No, Bree and I, well, I mean, maybe this is one of them. I don't know. But Bree and I are really wanting to know, what is the most outrageous marketplace play that you've been pitched on?
Oh, well, I don't want to like throw anyone under the bus, you know, because sometimes things are stupid, but other people might not think so. I wouldn't even call them outrageous as much as like, really, that just seems so boring. Like the things to me that I like really just sap the energy are things where it's like, yes, there's an opportunity. Probably it's probably a small market, but really more than anything, feels like this should have been built probably 10 years ago. And that would have been novel. But now it's like you making a marketplace to match. It would be like if someone came to you today and said like, what if you matched dog walkers and dog owners? And it's like, well, that was a great idea and Rover did it, but what if there's like, you know, but today that's not so exciting. Yeah. Like, or like there's still a bunch of used car marketplaces and it's like, well, it feels like that's happened a lot and some of them went public recently. So it's like, it's, I wouldn't call it outrageous, but it's just like, you know, do something exciting. Come on, think bigger. You know, disrupt something more. So that's not stuff that we get excited about.
You know, so there's been like the PayPal mafia, the Facebook mafia. Is there an Airbnb mafia now that's going to appear?
I mean, there have been at least 30 companies that have started out of Airbnb. Yeah. Coinbase is the most well-known. Brian Armstrong was an Airbnb engineer. I think it's like, it's ripe for it in that it was a very surprisingly scrappy company. And one of the core values was actually serial entrepreneurship in reference to the cereal boxes that they made to keep the company afloat back in the 2008 election. They had the Obama O's and the Captain McCain's or something like that. It really is part of the company. I think it's ripe for it, but a bunch of companies have started out of Airbnb. So it's happening. I think for us, like we've backed, I think three of the companies we have invested in out of the 11 have come from Airbnb alumni. That's not like everything, but it's, you know, we would love to see more of it.
So you started Wave Capital, which, you know, with Airbnb folks, and you are the one with the most heart and soul of the firm, the EQ, if you will, and the eye for successful teams and talent coming from your corp dev experience. And, you know, arguably the most important part of venture capital. Tell us the story of your guys's $50 million raise.
Well, my partner Riley is equally important in Wave, so I will definitely give him a huge shout out. And I think part of what makes us work so well together is like we have a basis in values, and Vic and I have talked about this before. We have a very shared value system, but we have different complementary skill sets, which is really nice. And things that like we enjoy that the other doesn't, and it's fun to also have that. So Wave, I mean, I alluded to before, I really didn't think I would get back into venture. It was like actively not in the plans. And then fast forward to my Airbnb time, and I got to this place where it was like, this is again the dream job. Like I got to start it from scratch, and I got to build the processes how I wanted to. And I was working on this acquisition that was like a very technical acquisition, which I really loved. I loved like the very product and tech oriented stuff. And it was like big and sexy, and it had, you know, a lot of board level interaction, and it was very much like very high profile. And I was like, you know, it's not doing it for me. Like this is literally as good as it gets for me. And I'm kind of not that into it anymore. And so it was my realization and wake up call that I had to really figure out what I wanted to do, because it was not going to be M&A forever. You probably sense the theme from like how I made my decisions on companies to join, that I was very much focused on like taking it up a notch at every stage. Mm-hmm. And when I thought about that in terms of what it meant in operating land, I was just like, I don't think I wanted, I just realized I didn't want to be head of corp dev and BD, or move over to product, or move over to operations, or be a CFO one day. That wasn't exciting to me. I wish it was. I mean, they are great jobs. They're enviable jobs. It just wasn't something I was excited about. And so I started reopening the venture conversations, talked to a few people who I view as mentors about like, should I do this? And they all tried to talk me out of it for various reasons, probably because they're actually, you know, smart people that realize like venture is hard and maybe not for everyone. But I like got my head open-minded to at least talk to firms. And in my head, I was like, being a partner is probably very different than being an associate. And maybe that's enough for me to feel like it's the right role for me. And so all this is to say, I fully expected, once I kind of cleared my head of the, I don't want to do operating, and I think I'm open-minded to venture again, that I would just join a firm. Cause like I, when people would ask me often if I would ever start a company, and the answer was like, absolutely not, never. And so the same would go for a venture firm. It just felt very, I don't know. It was never in the cards. Like absolutely not was very much the answer. And so I talked to a few firms, and it just felt like I was tricking myself into thinking that the things that I didn't like about it before were going to be gone. And so I was really craving this, like, is there a way that I can invest, but be collaborative and work at this, what I realized was Seed, or what Seed had evolved into, because during the, you know, almost 10 years since I had left Menlo, the Seed ecosystem had massively changed, and what it meant to invest, you know, with a $2 million check, which is what we were doing when we were back in the day, starting out, like that was called a seed round now. And so I think all that came together, and Riley was kicking around the idea of starting Wave. And it was like, okay, no, maybe I'll consider it. But by the way, I'm totally interviewing at these other places, and if they give me a great offer, I'm going to take it. And he was like, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. And like, to his credit, just kept trying. And like, I kept realizing how this vision of what I thought venture was and how it would be different just wasn't the truth. And so anyway, I'm glad that Riley kept at it, and that I made this choice. And, but man, the fundraise was hard. It was super hard, and it took a year. And, you know, it's, it gave me a lot of humility. I was also pregnant with my second. So I was like huge, like we literally closed or, you know, soft circled on all the money, like right as I was going out to have my baby. So it was a very intense, number of months. But you know, part of actually what got me through and part of the decision-making was A, I felt like, you know, in the back of my head, I was always focused on the risk-taking and learning moments in my career. But candidly, I was also very previously drawn to brands. Clearly, like I was drawn to the logos. I wasn't going to the, you know, seed stage startup. I granted they don't need corp dev people, but still I was drawn to like, is this going to be a huge company? Great. I'm going to get on it. And, that was the hardest part of me deciding to start Wave was letting go of, I don't have a brand to put in front of me. This is just on me. So if it doesn't go well, that's a reflection on me. And I have no one else to blame. I have no one else to hide from. I can't say it was the politics or anything. It's like, this is on me. And I hope I can trust myself now at this point in my career enough that I'm okay with that. And it took me months to get to that point where I was like, okay, I'm ready to do it. And even actually, it's funny. I kind of forget about this. Once I made the decision, I didn't even really tell my friends for a while. I was so embarrassed actually that I decided to start a fund. I was like ashamed of it, which I don't know. In hindsight, I don't really understand that. It doesn't actually make sense. But I think I felt like if I'm saying means I think that I'm so amazing that I can start a fund. And I never wanted people to think that I thought that because I absolutely didn't. If anything, I felt like this huge imposter syndrome. And so, but finally, as I got more comfortable with it and was, you know, going through the fundraising process, it was just like, this is happening. And now it's like, I can't imagine not having Wave. It's just the most fulfilling thing I've done in my career so far. And it's just so funny because I never would have seen this for myself.
Wow, that's really insightful that you are recognizing that you didn't want to tell people because you were kind of suffering from imposter syndrome, which by the way, a lot of founders we know suffer from. So
Absolutely.
But one thing also that stood out is that you were having your second child, and you know, I work with a lot of VCs, so does Vic. Not a lot of VCs are mothers. One thing that I've noticed in my career is a lot of the female founders that I've worked with have a hard time even getting funded because, let's face it, male investors don't understand their business model, or even their wives don't understand the business model, unfortunately. Like a really good friend of mine had a marketplace actually for products that were from women in Africa and Latin America. And I remember pitching it to a VC and he was like, you know, I pitched this to my wife and
the worst.
This is so bad. But he was like, they basically have an interior designer, so like she just didn't get it, you know? God, this is such an incredible company. So I love that you're a woman and you're a mother. Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, you know, listen, I think I was actually just chatting with a friend of mine, who is a woman who started a firm with another woman, and they're two phenomenal investors that have a way healthier track record, longer track record than I do. And certainly, I mean, my partner, Riley, really just came from operating experience. So he built out the data science function at Airbnb, was one of the first 10 employees, obviously is incredibly bright, but wasn't an investor. And she was telling me how hard their fundraise was. And I was just like, I'm sorry. Like the questions she was getting were around, could she win deals? And it's like, hello, here's what I've done. I can show you. And you know, me being surprised is stupid at this point. Like I shouldn't be. Candidly, I think it helped that I had, a male partner there, especially being super pregnant. I seriously can't imagine being a solo GP, super pregnant and raising a fund. Although one of my founders raised her seed round while super pregnant. So as a solo founder at that point. So, you know, it's doable. I think, it's a big part of why I wanted to start a firm too. I wanted to feel like we could build a culture that I was proud of. And that's not to diss all the venture firms out there, but I just, none of them felt like what I wanted to be represented by, and none of them felt like a good fit that I talked to at least. And honestly, a big driver of it was the fact that I had already had a daughter. Like I had a almost 2-year-old at that point, and it's going to be years until she realizes like what I've done and what I've accomplished. But I was very driven by the fact that like, I think she'd be proud of this, and I want to be, you know, a good example for her. And I don't want my imposter syndrome or any of that to get in the way. Cause that's like, you know, like I said, with, you know, her reaction to there being a female vice president, she doesn't know any different, you know, and I just want to continue that. So it was actually the, you know, and being pregnant, I also thought about that for my son. And so it's funny that that actually ended up being a motivator. But yeah, I'm not gonna lie. Like it was hard. It was hard. And I'm so thankful that we have an equal partnership where, you know, half of it is a woman, half it's a man. We're both white though. And we talk about this all the time that like, when we bring on another partner or more investors into our firm, we need to bring on more diversity. Cause it's not just about having one white woman and one white man at the table.
Yeah. I mean, look, I know this problem intimately, and my partner, Maggie, in New York, white woman. And I don't know if I'm labeled as a minority, frankly, in the venture world, as much anymore.
I don't know.
But oftentimes we are, our failures are graded much harder, and our, you know, successes are sort of attributed to situation and, you know, expertise and experience, et cetera, all those good things. Right. And so it's hard to, sometimes sell yourself against, you know, a harder, harsher critics, right. Or those LPs.
Yeah. I mean, the other story that will remain anonymous, but I'll share it in terms of who the person was or the firm. Yeah. I ended up getting an offer at a venture firm for a role, a principal role. And I had been very explicit the whole time that I was like, listen, I'm only exploring this if this is for a partner role, because that's important to me. And, anyway, I went through a long process and I got a principal role offer, which, you know, is great. And it was a very generous comp package, but to me, it was the symbolism of it. And the person who gave it to me was someone who I knew and had worked with before and had very similar experience to me, and was a GP. And brought in as such. And I was just like, oh my God, this is actually sexism at work. Like you're telling me, like the rationale behind the offer was, you just don't quite have the track record. We think you're great, but we just want to see you prove it out a little bit more. And like, we believe you'll get there. I mean, it's all the things that we've heard, and I've certainly heard, but it was the first time that it was so, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, I maybe have faced sexism in my career, but this felt like clearly what that was. And sadly, I've compared notes with other women who have gone on to take, you know, GP roles at firms, and they have similar stories. And had I not had that offer, I probably would have joined a firm, and I probably would have taken a partner offer. But that experience was like, oh no, I'm gonna just go ahead and do this and prove you wrong.
So I am glad that you joined the club. There are 2.7% of you out there in the venture world that have co-founded a fund.
Actually, 2.7. That's hard to believe.
Yeah, and it's stayed there, right? They co-founded a firm, 2.7%. So it's just hovered around that 3% mark, right, for a decade. Obviously, you invest in men and women founded teams. You don't have a mandate that I'm aware of at Wave to invest in X percentage of female companies. Where do you see your role as a female VC in investing in women founded companies? And do you think it's a bad thing that people have mandates that they're going to invest in X number of women, minorities, whatever it might be?
I think a third of our portfolio has female CEOs. It's not intentional.
Which is a healthy amount.
It's healthy, yeah. It's better than
healthier.
Average. Healthier. Yes. I think part of what anyone who has a different background brings to the table is a different lens. And to me, A, my network tends to be more heavily skewed towards women. Mm-hmm. So that's great as a starting place. We are intentional and we talk about it a lot. So at minimum, we have these conversations very openly, not only mm-hmm. about women versus men, but also like having more diversity across the portfolio generally. It's not enough, but I'm glad at least I'm at a place where I feel like not awkward about talking about it. But I think, I mean, here's an example. Well, there's two. One is, I invested in we have some wiggle room on our thesis. Not all of our companies are marketplaces, because we want to invest in, you know, a handful of companies that we just can't not invest in, even if they aren't marketplaces. And one of them was a baby formula company. So a founding team, female founding team, who we'd happened to work with at Airbnb, moms themselves, and they had an idea to create a baby formula that's more similar to what's made in Europe, but not FDA approved, and they wanted to get FDA approval. And really, that's clearly like something I care a lot about, and having had two little kids, like thought a lot about, knew a lot about. And that coupled with their just like, I mean, they are such amazing operators and excellent founders. I was just like, we have to do this. And for us, we have this concept of a silver bullet in our fund, where if we want to invest in, if there's one deal in the fund that like mm-hmm. might be very controversial, but we have to do it, we will. This was I was willing to use my silver bullet for this. Didn't have to, but like was willing to do it, 'cause I just felt so strongly about it. Now Riley was super supportive. He knew the founders before, but he didn't yet have a kid. He now does, but he didn't yet at that point. And so I think, you know, like I brought that experience into the conversation because it's part of my life and you have to do that. Sure. Another example though, I think is one of my most recent investments, which was in a female CEO. And honestly, she struggled with fundraising. Like we now are leading her seed, and she took pre-seed money along the way and persevered and got through and recruited and built a product in a way that like, I look at some of these other male CEOs in other industries and I'm like, you don't even know what it's like to have a hard fundraise. And you talk about it like you've had so much struggle.
Yeah.
Man, this woman has done so much. And honestly, that just made me so much more impressed with her perseverance, with her grit, with her passion and just unrelenting force that she brought to the company, that was what got me. I mean, I'd been talking to her on and off for a year but like seeing it in that light, I was like, aha, this is it. We got to do this. She is someone who cannot be stopped. So I think I see people who are underrepresented as like with that, like in spite of it all, you have accomplished so much. Oh my God. Imagine if you had funding, imagine if you had resources, because damn, look at what you've done without it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. I love that hunger. Because startups are hard. And so I've certainly seen like, you know, the best founding teams and the best markets struggle, because everyone struggles. Yeah. And in the struggle, you see the true colors come out, and you know, I want to see that grit. That's when I want to see it. So if I can see that all along the way, hey, even better. But to your other question about, do I believe in having a mandate? I'm all for it. I'm not against it at all. I don't believe in this, oh, well, you're lowering the bar. You know what? The bar is messed up. So let's open the aperture and at least have enough conversations to have a healthy pipeline. And if that's the way to do it, fine. That's great. Like put your capital to work and put your money where your mouth is. I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah. And it strikes me, you've been a person of substance rather than just kind of talking about it. And you know, your presence on, well, first of all, we talked about this.
I'm not big on Twitter.
I'm on Android. And then on Twitter, you're not that big on Twitter. You know, are there other ways that you like to give back to the female community? And is there something, you know, or is that really, I guess my question is, you know, what responsibility do you feel like you have being in that 2.7% and being someone who's been in an operational capacity at three of the biggest companies on the planet, and where do you feel like your role is? What is like your sweet spot, you think, in that whole equation?
I mean, I am all about rising tides and letting everyone come up. And how it tends to manifest is probably not scalable, but it's in mentoring, it's in one-off conversations, it's in if you are a woman and you've reached out to me on LinkedIn asking for like, hey, can I get on the phone with you for 30 minutes to pick your brain on a career thing? I've probably done it. And I've probably just said like, yeah, let's do it. And not only will I have the phone call, but I will really try my hardest to make a point of following up with like that intro or something like that. Cause I just think that's so important. And again, that's really not the most scalable thing, but it makes me feel good. I love it. And I've certainly benefited from those random one-off intros that I got. And, you know, like my job at Menlo was because I connected with a friend of a friend who happened to be someone who I ended up working with at Dropbox. His name is Chen Li. He's like a legend, and he was at NEA and he had a phone chat with me, and then he forwarded me the Menlo resume drop and I submitted it and I got it. And so I look at these moments of like complete what feels like serendipity. And I want to pass that along, and I want to pass along knowledge. And this is not a zero sum game. The pie can get bigger. It needs to get bigger. And I find it fun. So yeah, I'm all about that, but I'm very much not about like being on Twitter.
Well, let's move on to the next gift and the next segment. Ooh, so, okay. We have bag number what, B, I think. Yes, bag, yes, B.
The letter B.
Wait, what can you, is there like a method behind the madness of numbers versus letters?
Yeah, you'll figure it out once end. You okay. open them.
I certainly haven't.
I don't want to give it away.
Oh, salad spinner SS, is that okay?
Now you're picking up. Wow, you sound like you're smart. She's like, wait a second.
Wait,
that's because
second.
She really hasn't been having enough Manhattan. I know. I really feel like.
Oh, this is so cool. Wine country living. Look at that. Don't you want to be there right now? Don't you just want to be drinking that cab?
Just yes.
Isn't that there? Nice? We know you like California beautiful. Cabs, and we know that you like remodeling. And so,
like it or I like into it. Oh, amazing.
I like decorating too. So having like decorating books and architecture books around are always like really good points of inspiration.
Yeah.
But we wanted to play a game with you.
Ooh.
And the first question has to do with that book. Vic, you want to start the game?
Yes. Yeah. So this is a new segment that we're going to coin. Would you rather?
Oh God. Okay. Yeah. Played that a million times in my household. Yes. Okay.
This is a podcast worthy would you rather. Okay. You have to have your drink out. Do you have more?
I've already drank it. You guys, catch up. Jeez. It wasn't that bad.
I had another one made.
Oh, bartender. Where is my my bartender, my husband?
I know.
Bartender. Everyone needs Laura.
So yes, exactly. Laura, by the way, has just found out that she is fantastic at making Manhattans, and I feel like we're gonna
that's a good skill. That's a great skill.
We are going to be drinking more Manhattans in our future, I believe.
You can go to Nick's house
you guys
Christmas.
Enjoy them. I know it's that. Come over to the Adlers.
Exactly. Well, listen, drinking water is fun. We enjoy not only drinking alcoholic beverages, but also the non-alcoholic ones.
Okay.
Water, so that works fine.
To that hydration station.
So, first question of would you rather?
Okay.
Would you rather build a dream home from scratch or remodel an old home?
Well, I'm doing it and I'm building. So that would be the answer. I'm at the finish line of completing the dream home. So
how many years has it been?
It's been
4 months.
It will be 2.5 years from purchase to completion.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. I mean, COVID threw a little bit of a wrench. You know, there was some shutdowns and stuff. We expected 2 years. So it'll be about 6 months over. But so definitely that. And you know what? Here's why. First of all, it's it tends to be, I don't want to say less expensive, but you can have a better handle on the expenses when you do a complete from scratch. Because there's no like gotchas, like, oh, open that wall. Turns out there's asbestos. Turns out that's going to be a huge thing. Or like, ooh, that actually turned out to be a supporting wall, not a decorative one or what have you.
Yep.
So there's none of that because you have full visibility into budget.
Sure.
And then there's no limit. There's no like constraints. You don't have any of these artificial like, oh, well, that room is a little smaller than I wanted because it was original. It's like, nope, this is exactly what I wanted to look like. So it takes a little longer, but the budget certainty is nice. And then getting what you want is nice. So we're like 3 months away from moving into the dream. So really excited.
All right.
That was a layup question. It's like, I had strong feelings.
We do. Our second question, would you rather fund two exemplary women completely outside of your investment thesis or two men that were doing something mildly interesting but are squarely inside your thesis? And I think you answered it.
I feel like I kind of answered that. Yeah. I mean, I think, two though, like one, come on.
I double, you know, I know this, there's a lot of, double shots, I suppose. I don't know.
I mean, I guess, listen, as an investor, I am 100% drawn to teams. So first and foremost, it's teams. And we kind of touched on that before. Like that is honestly what I spent most of my M&A career focused on was like founding teams. And it's what I think is the best determinant of a successful outcome. So I'm always going to be like team oriented. So, I mean, regardless of the sex, I would say like whichever team I felt was best suited and to attack whatever they're going after. Right. So I guess in that case, it would be the two women.
Okay. Fine. Fair. Very, very well said.
Diplomatic. Is that what translation? Diplomatic? You know, going into politics next, guys.
All I have to say is that the Aperol spritzes on episode 3 were a little bit scarier because I feel like I just kept drinking them faster.
Oh, yeah, that's so
but these crazy. Are hitting me all at once. Mm-hmm, so I don't know.
Okay. All right.
The third, would you rather join, or actually, sorry, I should say this again. Let me rephrase this, knowing now what I know about you.
Okay.
Are you more likely to become a celebrity on Clubhouse or active again and a celebrity on Twitter?
Oh, it would definitely be Clubhouse. I mean, regardless, I think audio is just I love the format. So I think I translate better to the spoken word than I do to the tweets.
To the tweets,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I just have fun talking to people. I like talking to people. Yeah. I'm not very funny on Twitter. I'm really just not good at it. So it's partly like I'm not good at it, so I don't lean into it. And it's partly like I roll VC Twitter.
So your meme game is not as strong as you would like it.
Although I must say in IRL, I love a pun and I think I have like decent humor, but no, it doesn't translate. It just doesn't translate.
Okay. Fair. All right. And then our final, would you rather, we know that you like the Peloton.
I do. Oh.
But have you ever, and would you rather get on a mountain bike or a road bike and just go
versus my Peloton?
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm obsessed with my Peloton. I'm actually intimidated by outdoor anything exercise. So I will preface by saying that's extreme. I really didn't exercise until this past year and I got in getting a Peloton. And now I'm one of those people that I hated where it's like I plan my ride the night before, I get excited about it. I mean, I literally hate myself for saying that out loud.
Do you have a favorite instructor?
I have different moods for different instructors. Like Ali Love is probably up there.
Yeah.
I'm a love. Well, I just love them all for different reasons. Like that's how they've turned me into a fitness freak. It's crazy. Yeah. And so I would choose Peloton over anything.
Okay.
And I acknowledge that I kind of want to vomit when I hear myself say that. So don't worry, everybody. I get it. It's awful.
It's okay. All right, fine. I said that was our last one, but we have one more. Would you rather watch The Social Dilemma on Netflix or The Social Network
A Social
movie?
Network, 100%. Love that movie. Love that movie. In fact, I think we rewatched it in the last 6 months. Yeah,
You?
we did. I love that movie. I just think it's a great movie. And The Social Dilemma, it's like, honestly, we started it and I had to turn it off. It was just like, I get it. It's bad. I get it. But you're not telling me anything new. And it feels like you have an agenda. And anyway, but I love The Social Network.
What do you think about Armie Hammer's cannibalism?
What is that even? Was that real? That's what I think. Was that real or was he like on drugs and joking and it was taken out of context?
It's his fetish. Multiple women have claimed that he has slid into their DMs wanting to eat
But
them.
like,
I think that could be
maybe that's so
something
he I
different.
did isn't he getting divorced? Is this the root of it?
He
I
is
don't.
getting divorced, yeah.
Oh my
Every
goodness.
time I think of The Social Network, though, I just think of him as the Winklevoss twins,
But
and now I think of him as a cannibal.
isn't that even more fitting? Right?
Right?
Right? The wink
It all
levi.
comes together right there.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's super weird. That I just couldn't believe that that was real because it's so weird. That's really weird. But I guess
CH
we all have our
Worthington.
things. Remember
I
how I said
couldn't
everyone can
be.
have their own thing and I won't judge them? Clearly, I'm going to judge you if you're into cannibalism. So
Yeah.
that's
Well, okay. Look, all of our games here on the podcast end in victory for the VC.
it. Okay.
And this is no different. You won the
Oh,
game
thank
of Would You
God.
Rather.
Okay. Very
And we are
competitive.
right. And we are
As
so.
are every VC.
There were wrong answers, and fortunately, you didn't get any wrong.
You didn't get any of them wrong. You answered all of them
Ew.
correctly. Yeah. So as your prize, is this right, Bree? She gets to
I get the last
unbox
thing.
the last
Yeah, she gets the
Number
last one of
three.
the three.
Yes.
You guys, honestly, I feel guilty that you've done all this.
How?
Oh my
Why?
God. Because I would, like I said, I would like give you things to be on
No, but
this.
this is the premise of our show, to give
Oh my
amazing gifts to
God.
VCs that already have it all and then have
That
them
have it
share
all.
their life story with
Oh,
you.
look at that. Oh my, you
But
got,
does she
are
have
you
her
serious?
own vest?
This is
So for the
Trace
folks that are just
IPOs.
listening,
Oh
yes,
my God. I
for the
actually
folks that are
don't have a vest. I'm like the only VC that doesn't have a vest, let alone a
unbelievable.
Patagonia vest.
Well,
So
now
this is
number one, you
actually
have a
amazing.
vest. But can you, for the
Wow.
listeners that aren't watching us on YouTube eventually, can you explain to the listeners what's on the vest?
Well, I'm assuming that you're referring to having been at three pre-IPO companies. And is that
That's right.
right? Yeah.
That
Okay.
is that's
So
correct.
that's correct. Okay. So I mean, can I wear this? I don't know that I can wear this and not have people be like, "Are you a douchebag?"
Well, first of all, you
It
have to
came
wear
from
it.
us though.
Yeah,
It
it
came
came
from
from us.
us. Would you think people think that I did this? That I'm like,
You can cover
"Guys,
it up with a
I was
badge
part
if you
of
really
three
want.
IPO companies and now I'm a VC." That,
Well,
oh my
it's the. Did you
God.
ever see Silicon Valley?
Yes, of course.
The
Love that
Trace
show.
Comas. Oh my
Trace Comas Club.
God. That's right.
Yeah.
The Trace Comas. Oh, that's amazing. Oh my God. Okay, that makes it better. That totally makes it better. I didn't catch that. That makes it a lot better. Oh man, this
And
is so cool. I
as a
seriously
matter of
don't have a
fact,
Patagonia vest. How can I call myself a VC?
right. And when we eventually get to socially hang out with one another in the same room or area, we will be having a party with all of our guests. And to
Wait, who
get
else have
into
you
the
had
party,
on?
to get into the party,
You
you
gotta have a
have to wear your
vest.
vest. Yeah.
Wait, so are there different things that you've had in like stitched in? Of
Yeah.
course, of course. Can you
Thanks for
share?
not listening to the only
I
other one
haven't. I
episode that we've released
haven't. I
thus far.
know. I'm sorry. Ah,
Man.
you should have given me homework. I would have done it.
No, we know you would have, but
I
you're
like to
busy.
come prepared.
You like to come prepared, and you did, but you've got the drinks, and
hey,
you were
look
fantastic.
At my equipment, guys. You
yeah.
know,
it, yeah,
it's our job to stalk you, Sarah. Which okay, we did.
Wait, but
we,
can you share? Can you give me what you've done?
Sure,
by
but
now,
we're gonna edit
people,
it.
You can edit it out. That's fine.
Yeah,
we're gonna edit it out so other people have to go back and listen.
Yeah, yep.
And so
spoiler alert. You know. Just kidding.
Yeah, we started off with Scott Beechuk. That is not a secret. So Scott from Norwest is already out there. And then okay. we've got
wait, but what was his thing? What did you put on it?
Oh, what was Scott's?
He's a former DJ.
Yes.
So we got him.
So good. That's
he's
so
also,
good.
He's also a member of the Plur Revolution, right? So he believes in peace, love, unity, and respect,
okay.
Which is all a part of like the raver community. So.
Oh, that's so good.
And then we had Brendan Farwell on.
Oh,
and,
Brandon, yeah.
Yeah, Brandon at X Fund. We got him a...
We got him two vests.
Well, we got
him
well, a...
Because it was our Christmas episode.
It was our Christmas episode. Yeah. And, but then we also got him the... yeah,
you see... Was he at Stanford? I know he was at Stanford, but yeah.
Yeah.
Was... I've actually known him from... like
yeah right DFJ there. Days and before that
he was dating a friend from growing up at Stanford.
Oh wow,
so yeah we oh, go wow. way back yeah.
okay and then Mohanjit Jolly MJ, who's an Iron Pillar fund which is an Indian focus fund okay. MJ his dream is to go to the playa and go to Burning Man if his wife will let him.
Okay.
And so we got him a vest, and I should say we Ren and Bree are the brains behind this, but
so
they got
thoughtful,
him a vest
you guys.
with on it at the on the breast of the vest. So
we got him like a Burning Man outfit, and then he has his like
goggles.
You know vest. Yeah, exactly.
It was
the sunglasses.
Thing.
You know,
it was the whole thing. It was the whole thing.
I think that ship has sailed for me. Burning Man is not in the cards.
Yeah, I you know I haven't been to Burning Man. My brother-in-law, my sister's husband's gone to Burning Man, you know, 6-7 times, and I think he's going to go next year too. I don't, you know,
no,
when, yeah, whenever that happens me. Next, but yeah, it's not in the cards for me either. It's just not my vibe, to be honest
yeah,
with you.
Yeah. But I am a. You would think I actually would own a vest, but it's very. I'm happy I now do. So thank you guys.
All right, so now we're back because we like to end every show with...
Not with a would you rather?
Not with a would you rather
okay.
or something secret that we say off camera that won't be recorded.
Okay.
We like to end every show with a toast from our guest. It is your 30 seconds of whatever you want to pitch, whatever you want to be thankful for, whatever is on your mind, please.
Okay.
The floor is yours to give us a toast and to this episode.
Okay. Well, you know, I will say, cause I'm still reeling from the end of year reflection and, you know, coming through 2020 and now feeling, especially on inauguration day, you know, a lot of hope and a lot of energy for what's to come. I just feel so grateful for and this sounds really trite, but hopefully if you've listened to this episode, you can sense that I'm not, I swear, like just so grateful for having figured out like a career path that gives me the flexibility to have my family and spend the time I do with them, but do in work that I find incredibly motivating and interesting. And to be at a place like with my family and financially where like, I just feel like actually with the Airbnb IPO, which was really, you know, what a roller coaster of emotions, you know, having been at that company and then seeing what was happening at the beginning of 2020 and then ultimately like, wow. It just gave me such a sense of like financial freedom that has always been so important for me personally, for my entire career, kind of an underlying tone for how I thought about risk taking, that now it lets me feel like I can breathe in a different way, in a deeper way. And so all of that's to say, I'm going into all this year with like so much gratitude and so much appreciation for all the steps that got me to where I am, the good and the bad, including the toddler tantrums that I deal with on a daily basis, because, you know, they're all in service of this future. And I do feel like really it's a bright one. So even in the midst of a pandemic that we are still in, it just, I just have so much gratitude. So, thanks to even the bad ones along the way, cause they motivated me to be where I am today. So cheers to that.
That's wonderful. Cheers.
Cheers.
Sarah, you've been amazing.
Thank you so much for having me and for all these wonderful unboxing experiences. Oh my goodness. I'm spoiled. Thank you guys so much.